Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the sports desk of the Lubbock Avalanche Journal and RedRaiders.com, here's your look at all things Texas Tech sports. Now, here's the Red Raider Podcast.
Well, hello again, everybody. Welcome to the Red Raiders Podcast, powered and brought to you by AJ Media and the Lubbock Avalanche Journal. I'm Don Williams from the Avalanche Journal Sports Department, joined as always by Carlos Silva Jr., AJ Media Sports Editor. It's the first time that we've done this in quite some time, Carlos. Mm-hmm. And this Saturday at Jones AT&T Stadium, provided Tech has enough people, Tech and Houston Baptist have enough people test negative for COVID-19,
yep,
there will be a football game. Red Raiders and Huskies, it'll be the first sporting event for Texas Tech in 6 months to the day, according to Matt Wells this week.
Yep.
March 12th was the day that you were in Kansas City.
And then I wasn't.
And then you weren't.
Yep.
Texas Tech was pulled off the floor at the Big 12 Conference Tournament, and there's not been a live Texas Tech sporting event since then until Saturday night, 7 p.m. at Jones AT&T Stadium.
It's just really weird to think about that, Don. I mean, you go to a game, you think you're going to cover it, and then all of a sudden, 5 months later, you haven't really done much. I mean, I tweeted about it when I went to a high school football game covering Estacado. Dumas, that was the first live event I covered in 5 months, man. And it's not like I know everyone's going to use the word unprecedented all the time, but I think just normal is kind of something that went back to my routine, so to speak. Like, I went to a game. Yes, you got your temperature checked and all that stuff, but I mean, it's still going, taking stats for a high school game, kind of doing all that stuff. I think that's something that's going to be a little bit foreign to you, or maybe not, because you're not used to covering stuff in the summer and stuff. But I mean, that's just something that's just been on the minds of everyone else. But I think more than anything, I think it's just nice to get back to routine, and hopefully the podcast will start going weekly again. I'll start doing stuff for basketball, and obviously we'll be doing this for football too.
And we have to keep our fingers crossed, I think, at this point, because Big 12 says they're going to play football, ACC intending to play football, SEC intending to play football. But Carlos, what we've already seen is three Big 12 games have already been postponed because of too many positive tests for COVID-19. Last night, Baylor and Louisiana Tech game was postponed because of the outbreak on the Louisiana Tech team.
Yep.
TCU, SMU was postponed. And Oklahoma State's game
against Tulsa was postponed. Which is interesting, because now the other thing, too, that people have to remember, games are going to get changed. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the 2:30 game, which that was going to be the Oklahoma State game, got replaced with Kansas, if I'm not mistaken. So just all those small little things. And we'll get into some of these other thresholds that teams need to hold with the Big 12 and stuff as we kind of talk about some of these things. But I think, like you said, Don, it's just a matter of it's literally a wait-and-see type of deal now for all these teams.
Yeah. Big 12, as you mentioned, they established thresholds last week. Everybody has to have at least 53 players available. They have to have 7 offensive linemen available, 4 interior defensive linemen, and at least 1 quarterback available. If you don't meet any one of those thresholds, if you don't have, for example, 4 interior defensive linemen, then Bob Bowlesby, the Big 12 commissioner, can declare it a no contest. Teams do still have the option of playing if they don't have one of those thresholds. If all your quarterbacks are sick, you can put somebody in out there. You can put another guy in, a quarterback, and keep playing if you want. But
there are some wide receivers that play quarterback.
But Bowlesby can he can say it's a no contest if you wanted to make it a no contest. And we ask, and there are, you know, 2 weeks ago, Texas Tech said that they had 21 active cases on the team. Those were all 21 football players.
Mm-hmm.
We have established that.
Yep.
They were all 21 football players. Then last week, they announced that 12 football players had active cases. And I asked Matt Wells on Monday, of those 12, how many of those guys have returned? And he thought about it for a minute and said, three.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big chunk of guys that's out right there. That is not even, and that is not taking into account how many additional players there might be who have to quarantine because, who hadn't tested positive.
Correct.
For having to quarantine because they have been in close contact mm-hmm. with positive tests. Matt Wills acknowledged that 2 weeks ago, that there are more than just those 21 guys who are not on the football field. And so I think, you know, we saw Monday the Tech released the depth chart, and there were some unusual
– yeah.
There were some unusual circumstances, like Zach Adams and Casey Verhulst mm-hmm. were conspicuously absent from the tackles depth chart. And
yeah.
DeMarcus Fields started 32 games, and he was not listed as a starter. And Adrian Fry has started 15 games, and he was not listed as a starter. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, ask Matt Wells – can we deduce from that that some of these guys have missed time because mm-hmm. of COVID? And he said, yes, mm-hmm. that is accurate. Some of those guys have missed time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be, you don't really know what to expect on Saturday night in terms of numbers of available personnel. And that's going to, that's still to be determined because there's testing on Wednesday.
Yep. Three times this week.
Mm-hmm. Testing on Sunday, testing on Wednesday, which we don't have the results from Wednesday's test.
Friday night.
And then a test again on Friday. You're right. So we're not 100% sure there will be a game until you show up at the game and they put the football down at the 35-yard line.
Yeah.
Or 30-yard line.
Yeah.
So they kick it off.
Well, here's the thing, too, Don. Like that's one of the other interesting factors that kind of gets thrown into all this is obviously the COVID is going to be the thing that's on everyone's mind, but some of these could be injury-related. We don't know. And that's the other interesting factor that we had in a newspaper article from the Oklahoman. Lincoln Riley suggested that they'll just give certain numbers because at some point it's a little bit of a competitive advantage to know which players are not going to play going into this game. So it's an interesting discussion to have. We may have this at another time, maybe after this first game, to kind of see how things go for Texas Tech. But I think that the one thing to take away from this is that wait and see mode, as much as people hate to hear the term, day, it's literally one day at a time. I mean, you have to go, and technically, really, the big day to pay attention to is Friday, going to game day on Saturday. I think that's going to be the most important thing, is when you go there and you actually see which players are out, suited up, and playing, if they are playing that game. And I think that's where we're going to learn a lot more about Texas Tech when we do get this game, when they play Houston Baptist, 7 p.m., if I'm not mistaken, at the old AT&T Stadium. And not only that, but there's going to be fans in the stands. So it's going to be at least something.
Not a whole lot.
Not a whole lot. But
maximum number, about 16,500 is what we've been told.
And that's a question that we'll get to. And like I said, we're going to talk a little bit about this Texas Tech-Houston Baptist matchup, and then we'll get to some of your Twitter questions as we normally do, and we'll get to those a little bit later. But I think that the most important thing is, like we said, the threshold we've already talked about, testing three times a week. For those that have not followed it, Texas Tech Soccer had its match postponed with, if I'm not mistaken, it's
Kansas State.
Kansas State, thank you. They were supposed to travel to Manhattan, and now that one's postponed because they met a threshold where they did not have the
two available goalkeepers.
Two available goalkeepers, and yes, if you are watching the roster, they do have three. One is a transfer from Tyler Junior College, has not met eligibility, so that is why that has happened, for those that are asking about that. But again, it affects all sports, and may affect some smaller, I shouldn't use the term smaller, but I guess smaller roster teams, so to speak, because of close contact. And I think that's what hurt the soccer team. We'll see if it hurts football. But I think the best thing now, at least for some people that are fans of college football and just fans of Texas Tech, they can at least focus on there may be a football game on Saturday that they can watch.
So let's talk about – let's pretend that COVID never happened and that there's a football game on Saturday and discuss personnel. I've written a lot in the last 24 hours about Texas Tech's linebackers because there's been interesting developments there. Last year you lose Jordan Brooks, Butkus Award finalist. He's gone, first round draft choice. Then in the spring, before spring practice, Evan Rambo decides to medically retire because of knee injuries. And then in the summer, you get another blow when Xavier Benson decides to not play, to step away from football this season to address his mental health. And it looks like your linebacker room is gutted, and it is in terms of guys who played the most and made a lot of tackles last year. You got Rico Jeffers back, who was the second leading tackle on the team, but Matt Wells and his guys really went after finding veteran replacements. And you signed Krishan Merriweather in January or December. He joined in January. Brandon Bouye Randall from Michigan State joined in January. And then they got the big addition here just about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
When Colin Schooler comes aboard from Arizona. And in that first depth chart that they released Monday, Colin Schooler's starting at the weak side linebacker, which is a surprise. It is and it isn't a surprise. It isn't a surprise from a standpoint that Colin Schooler had 312 tackles the last 3 years for the U of A, and he was some level of all Pac-12 all three of those seasons. The guy has huge credentials. It's a surprise from the standpoint that he walks in the door and after about, what, a week of practice or so, a little bit more than that, they say, okay, ready to go. He knows the stuff well enough. He's going to be out there, presumably, first snap on Saturday night. That, to me, that's going to make it the most interesting position group to watch, is what those linebackers look like with all the new personnel but veteran personnel.
Well, I think it's interesting you bring that up, Don. And again, not to obviously be mean about this, but Houston Baptist would be the team that would be the perfect one to kind of work some of this stuff out. You know, if you're playing UT first week, maybe there's a little bit of a difference, but for lack of a better term, and I think you brought this up in one of your stories, speaking about all the words I've had to edit over the last couple months from you, they really haven't had a true scrimmage.
No, not in the traditional sense.
Yeah, so I mean, you're literally getting a scrimmage against someone else, and you're getting a scrimmage just to see and get evaluation tape on some of these guys. So I think that's one important thing. And I really do like the fact that you brought up the linebackers, but another position group that was really kind of looking really thin too was running back at a certain point. And then all of a sudden, Matt Wells, is a term that Chris Beard likes to use, got old at that position too by getting some transfers and some other guys, along with Taj Brooks and some of those other guys.
I was going to say, it's when he walked off the field last year at Memorial Stadium in Austin. Sir Roderick Thompson obviously had established himself.
Yeah.
But then not long after that, Dejon Henry.
Yep.
I say not long after that. It's actually the day before spring practice. Dejon Henry announces that he was going to transfer. And he goes to Houston. That leaves you with no experience at that position. So you got Taj Brooks, who was a state top 100 running back last year at Manor. Guy ran for 1,000 yards three different seasons.
Yep.
You expect for you think there's a chance that he can help you out.
I agree,
but still awfully thin. I mean, no one's proven in that room besides Sir Roderick Thompson. So then they continue to address it by moving Xavier White there from receiver to running back.
Big time playmaker up until he got hurt. For those that are forgetting about him,
he's another example of how West Texas players don't get recruited. I mean, Xavier White was a 1,000-yard receiver on a regional quarterfinal playoff game.
Yeah, that team was really good, and Wayne Hutchinson would not stop talking about the game. He was really good.
Yeah, 64 catches, 1,000 yards, 9 touchdowns. He doesn't get recruited. He goes to Garden City, Garden City.
Community College.
Or Dodge City, I forget which. Because those are his best options, not because he was academically eligible, because that was his best option.
Yeah.
And then comes back here last year. Anyway,
Dodge City, for those that are going to make fun of us for not knowing all this stuff. But
anyhow, made a name for himself as an inside receiver last year, got hurt early, and now they move him to running back. Now the difficulty for Xavier White was really no spring practice because he's coming off of shoulder surgery, and there were only 4 spring practices. So he's kind of an unknown now at running back.
He's also pretty small, too. I mean, 5'11", 190. I mean, that's pretty small for a wide receiver. Obviously, you don't want him taking a bunch of bumps going up the middle. So,
You got Sir Roderick Thompson to do that. Yeah. I think they can use Xavier White as kind of after Sir Roderick Thompson pounded.
Back.
Yeah, after to, Sir Roderick. I was going to say, though, after Sir Roderick Thompson has kind of pounded him, 4, 5, 6 carries on a series, then he can run White out there and pitch it for off tackle.
So I guess just
to and then you had Tadarius Townsend from Alabama, which now a lot of people are expecting Tadarius Townsend to do big time things, and maybe he will. But
wide receiver turn running back for those that aren't aware.
Here's a guy who was there. Yes, he did have a scholarship to Alabama. He was a scholarship player to Alabama, which suggests he's a talented guy. Yep. But
he was for his career,
For his career, 8 carries for 22 yards.
Yeah.
And so he hasn't really done it yet.
He did have a really good catch. I think he had a touchdown catching a, you know, a cosmetic score or something. But, I mean, the thing about being at Alabama, too, again, I agree with you looking at the stats, Don, but the thing is when you go to Alabama, there's a reason you either stay or you go. There's always 5-star guys ahead of you. So, I mean, it's not to say that he's not talented or anything, why he's coming here to Tech. He obviously found a need. Texas Tech found a person that could help that need, and I think that's going to be a good situation for both.
I think my point is people have suggested that Tech is in a better situation at running back right now than they were at this time last year, and I would say that remains to be seen, because this time last year Armon Shine was the guy who had 500 yards rushing at Utah when he came here, and Tajon Henry, you knew what Tajon Henry was, and you knew what Sarodrick Thompson was. These guys outside Sarodrick now, nobody has done it yet at the college level.
Now, here's an interesting question for you, Don. Back in the day when you used to cover stuff, and me maybe, people used to say you have a bell cow.
Yeah, and Sarodrick Thompson, I think, is a bell cow.
Nowadays, everyone's like, oh, yeah, you got to have two guys. You can't have one. Sarodrick could be your bell cow.
Oh, I think he is.
Guys can be complimentary.
I think he is. I think the thing is, though, is people are expecting big things from Brooks and White and Townsend.
Yeah.
And they do have talent. But, again, none of those guys have shown that they are a college running back yet.
Now, again, going back to our earlier statement about COVID and all this stuff, you may see some guys that you didn't think you'd be seeing this year because of said COVID, or maybe there's an injury and obviously some other stuff. So I think it's very important to keep in mind that there were some underclassmen and some guys that were some surprises. Ethan Card, even though he was an early signee, and he was coming here in January, if I'm not mistaken, he was there. I'm trying to remember another guy off the depth chart that kind of surprised me that was young, but there's going to be a lot of guys that are freshmen, probably true freshmen. Oh, Jalen Polk, he was the other guy. Miles Price could be another guy that could step up. They've got a lot of talent now. I think that's something that people forget that was a little bit lacking, for lack of a I just really messed myself up.
Well, I think they've upgraded the talent. I think that's fair.
So the talent has been upgraded, and you're not necessarily worried about if number one goes down, number two and three probably are not up to par. I think you've got guys that can be very admirable reserves that come up and help you, and I think that's one thing that is going to show this year with not only Texas Tech, but just teams overall, is one, how disciplined of a team you are. That's clearly going to show, because you have to do certain things that are just going to make sure that you are safe and that you do not have these outbreaks. And number two, how deep and talented are you? And I think you alluded to it with the linebackers. I just kind of talked about it with the running backs. We can talk about every position group, but they are at least one or two guys deep to where if someone goes down, I believe they could feel very confident. Not to say that they weren't last year, but I think it's a lot better of a situation that they had coming in their first year.
Better depth this year.
Yes, absolutely. But linebacker certainly a good one. Running back's a good one. I think everyone's going to want to ask, how's Alan Bowman?
Well, I think Alan's going to be fine.
Yeah. Maverick's healthy too.
What we've seen is, I think Alan Bowman is fine when he's healthy, as long as he's healthy.
Yeah.
And I think he's unfairly knocked as a guy who's injury prone.
I agree.
I would say that both of those injuries are injuries that
they're freak accidents.
I don't know. Well, I think they're injuries that you can throw any number of other quarterbacks out there, and they would suffer the same injuries.
Especially in the same circumstances. Like that one, you get
I mean, he was great. He was ground across the turf for 2 yards by a 220-pound linebacker. There are plenty of quarterbacks whose collarbones are going to snap in that situation.
I'm sure my shoulder would break.
There's plenty of quarterbacks whose lung is going to collapse when they're blasted on one side by a 270-pound defensive end and on the other side by a blitzing cornerback. So to me, Alan Bowman is not injury prone. To me, he suffered injuries that any normal quarterback would have suffered in the same circumstances. And I think now you add in the fact that he's been a college quarterback for 2 years. He's taken a lot of he's been in the film room for a lot of time,
especially last year.
Had a lot of chance to learn.
Especially last year.
Last year he was ready to go, I think, in, what was it, early November.
Yes.
And they decided not to play him just to save the year of eligibility.
Which he said on record, that's why he did it. And not only that, you save your year of eligibility, but then number two, like you said, stay in the film room. And I think that's probably the one thing that's going to help him the most. And Matt Wells and David Yost has said this on multiple occasions, whether it be this year or last year when they first came in, that first year to second year in their system, there's always a jump. And I know you've had this stat too, but...
And I think that is...
I think it's like a 10 points per game difference.
Actually, Utah State is about 17 points difference. Yeah. But I think that's a fair expectation just because in year one, you're doing so much learning. Mm-hmm. And in year two, you know what the system is. You know what the expectations are.
I also think it's going to be a more balanced offense, frankly. That might be a hot take because I know everyone likes to see the passing, but I think they're going to run a little bit more this year just because I feel like they have a running back that they like in Sir Roger Thompson. I think they've got other guys that they can do different things with that are going to look like runs, a la a bubble screen maybe to a Xavier White, or just put him in the backfield, throw him outside. I think that's going to be something that they do a little bit more this year. But just going back to Alan Bowman, I think I don't know if you can agree with the statement, but I do like the fact that you and I both agree. I don't believe he's injury prone. I think he's just been very unlucky. Could he be a guy that is a veteran that just hasn't played in a lot of games? Because, I mean, he's been in the film room for 3-plus years. He just hasn't seen the field because of said injuries.
Yeah, and he's played in 11 games. So.
Yeah. So
I think he's at a point where his experience is starting to pay off for you. I mean, he's already shown he can be a successful quarterback at this level. Now you add in the experience, you add in what they've got, I think, at receiver.
Mm-hmm.
I think Eric Ezekodman in particular is a guy who's ready to take off, who has a really high ceiling and will emerge as a number one guy.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Eric Ezekodman will be a number one receiver for Texas Tech, and I think it can happen this year. I think mm-hmm. he's that good.
The old X and Y like we normally do, the old slot receiver. So you're not going with the slot receiver this year for once.
Well, here's the thing. You know, the slot receivers, I think, will be better this year, too, because last year, Rigdon and Keshawn Carter and McLean Mannix were all kind of new to the system, and now you have all three of those guys returning with experience, and I think that will be a good position, too. Those guys should all be able to take their game to another level just because last year they were doing it, you know, first
mm-hmm.
Rigdon basically first year in the system, and Manning's not his first year in college football, but his first year in the system, and Carter his first year in the system. Now those guys, I think, should be able to elevate quite a bit as well. So, I think to tie it back to what we were originally talking about, I think obviously Alan Bowman will benefit from that because he's going to have some good options at all those spots. You know, Travis Coons, another example. Last year's first year.
Yeah.
This year he should be better just from the fact that he has a year under his belt.
And there's also some competition at the tight end position now, too. We saw, I can't think of his name right now. That was the other freshman I was trying to think of, tight end.
John
Holcomb. Thank you, yeah. But all the while, some guy you forgot, Don. TJ Vasher.
Position? DJ Vasher? I'm at a point where I think TJ is...
He's a very good red zone receiver.
Pardon?
He's a very good red zone receiver.
He's a good red zone receiver, and I'm at a point where I think TJ is kind of showing what he is. Now, this is a guy who is going to catch about 50 passes, and he's going to give you 500-something, 600-something yards, and he's going to give you 6 or 7 touchdowns. And that's a solid Big 12 receiver.
Absolutely.
I think it's the unfortunate thing is TJ was a big time recruit, and people keep waiting for him to catch 80 passes for 1,000 something yards and double digit touchdowns. And I don't know that that's going to happen. And again, I don't think it's a knock on him. It's not his fault that he was a big time recruit and that people had enormous expectation to him.
I think it goes back to that point. I think there's just depth and talent now for Texas Tech. Like, you've got Eric Ezukama, who was a real good number one receiver for them last year. He was consistent. Now you've got Dalton Reagan coming back, and you got all those guys.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. I think, having seen him now, I think Ezukama's ceiling is higher than Vasher's. I think Ezukama's a guy who can catch 70-some passes for 1,000-some yards and double-digit touchdowns. But I don't really think that TJ is going to get to that level. We shall see. Again, I don't think it's a bad thing. He's been consistent.
He's a fabulous receiver. He has a great catch radius.
He gives you 500, 600, some yards. He gives you 6 or 7 touchdowns.
Can make an ESPN top 10 catch every once in a while. You know, I mean, he's a very good receiver. It's just as of right now, they just haven't found the role that maybe they were looking for initially when he was recruited by the previous coaching staff. And I think that's a credit to what Matt Wells and his coaching staff have done, is they found other guys that can make plays, because clearly last year Eric Ezukama was consistent and he made plays. And I think that's what comes down to it. But speaking of making plays, before we kind of go through all this, because I think we're at the 25-minute mark, let's talk a little bit about the old Huskies of Houston Baptist. A lot of connections here between Matt Wells, Texas Tech, and Houston Baptist. First one being Jared Castor, if I'm not mistaken.
Jared Castor started center for Tech 2013 to 2015. He's Houston Baptist offensive line coach. And Zach Kittley, center of Texas Tech, track and field coach. Wes Kittley is Houston Baptist offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach. And Tyler Skuvnik, son of Tech president. Lawrence Skuvnik is Houston Baptist running backs and special teams coach. And this all started after the 2017 season. HBU's head coach Vic Sheely looked at the program, looked at what was available to them recruiting-wise in Texas, and said, okay, what's the most plentiful that can help us? It's quarterbacks and receivers.
Mm-hmm.
There are a bunch of those to go around. And so he decided, okay, let's run a spread passing offense.
A little RPO.
Who are a couple of young up and coming coaches who can install this offense? So he asked around, and one of the names that was recommended to him was Zach Kittley.
Yep.
And I remember, I don't recall what year it was, probably back about 16, maybe 16 or 17. Cliff Kingsbury, one day after practice, really spoke very highly of Zach, kind of raved about him. And I asked Cliff a few weeks later, I said, boy, you. I don't remember exactly how I phrased it or the question that I asked him, but I kind of followed up on it. I said, you know, man, you're really high on Zach Kittley. And he said, he's going to be able to coach quarterbacks. I can tell you that for sure. And now he got his chance at Houston Baptist. So he was Vic Sheely's hire. And then Sheely said he wanted Zach to have the latitude to hire people he knew who knew that system, could help install it. So Castor is one of those guys, and Tyler Skuvnik was another one of those guys. And so there's your Texas Tech connection. Sure enough, I mean, HBU went from there 1-10 2 years ago in 18 when those Tech guys first year down there, and they improved to 5-7 last year. And, you know, even if they're struggling, they lose 57-31 to North Texas Saturday night. This is not a great team.
31 points is still a lot to score.
I was going to say, but they are throwing the football around and throwing it.
Bailey Zapp can zip it.
It's Zappy, actually.
Zappy, well.
Bailey Zappy threw for
tomato,
what? 3,800 yards and 35 touchdowns last year?
I believe so. I can
look
that up.
And his two leading receivers, Ben Ratzlaff and Jarrah Stearns, have huge numbers. I mean, they look like Mike Leach here, Texas Tech receivers numbers. So those guys have they do throw the football.
Yep.
And they throw it really well. And they had a running back, young man, a big running back that ran for 723 yards last year. And I noticed he did not play on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. So I think his name is Merriweather too, by the way.
Yeah.
So
it was Ian Beek that got most of the carries that day.
Yeah. So. Yeah, but anyway.
So last year it was 5,800.
Jesus, that's a lot. 3,500, I believe.
3,500 yards passing.
I can't.
A whole bunch of touchdowns. But anyhow, bottom line. Yeah. These guys throw the football. They throw the football effectively. They run the offense at a fast pace. Keith Patterson said this week that he compared it a lot to Cliff Kingsbury's offenses. Asked Zach Kittley about that yesterday. He said, you know, it's a valid comparison, but you kind of do kind of evolve to make your system fit the talent that you have available.
Yeah. Which they've got a guy that can throw it.
They threw it 62 times the other night. So expect expect a ton of passing on Saturday night at Jones AT&T Stadium.
Which I think would be a very good test for this defense, because you've got a lot of guys, especially guys that have been cross-training. I know that's been a word that you and I have been hearing a lot during these Zoom press conferences that we've been having, but to kind of see how spur works, how some of the guys at defensive back, cornerback, if some of the starters you thought were going to be there play there, see how they play against a team like that, because at some point you're going to have to prepare for a team like a Texas in a couple weeks and see how you work against them. I think this is probably the most important game, just in a sense that, as I mentioned before, Texas Tech hasn't had a true scrimmage, so they don't really have much tape other than maybe doing some mock scrimmages, so to speak, maybe play at like 7 or something. But I think just to see some guys and just make some corrections, I think that's going to be the biggest thing for Texas Tech before they really kind of ramp it up. Because, I mean, most teams are so used to playing, you know, 2 or 3 non-conference games, and then you kind of get ready for Big 12. Now it's just 1, and then you go.
Yeah. All righty, let's move it to questions.
Go for it.
And here is we solicit your reader questions or listener questions.
Yes.
On Twitter.
Some days we remember, some days we forget to tweet it. So then that's why we wait a couple hours to let people talk.
Tech Hoops Guy asked a question that I like. Which of the following former players would you choose to add to this year's team?
I
notice a theme here.
Yeah.
Patrice Majondo-Mwamba.
Yeah.
Deke Bake. Poet Thomas, or Loliki Bongo Wonga.
That's all you, man. and I'm pretty sure you remember each of them.
I remember each of them,
yes. Yes, you do.
Now, if you had asked me this question last November or December, I would have said Loliki Bongo Wonga, because Loliki was a running back.
There you go.
And Texas Tech needed running backs. But now that they've kind of addressed the running back room, I would say Deke Bake, because of all those guys. Seriously, Deke Bake, I think, probably was the most impactful player of those four.
Okay.
You know, defensive lineman who had good size and some versatility in this defense. He could probably play defensive end or defensive tackle. Was here during the played on the Holiday Bowl team, the Red Bears Holiday Bowl team that beat Aaron Rodgers and Cal. So of those four, Deke Bake put him on the Texas Tech defensive line, and he would be in the rotation for sure.
It'd be tough. There's a lot of good guys there now. Tony Bradford, Nelson Mbanasor, Eli Howard. You'd have to fight for it, Don.
Okay, Michael Labarre. And you can follow him by looking at @Michael_L_a B.
Look for a photo of him and a dog.
Our friend Michael Labarre. He's complimentary. He said he needs my knowledge to tell him the last time Tech had this few fans in the stands.
Since you're smarter than the internet. Which is true.
I had to look it up, Michael. But, again, on a serious note, Texas Tech said max number of fans at Jones AT&T Stadium will be about 16,500. So I went back and looked it up. The last time that Tech had an announced crowd smaller than 16,500 was the 1962 game against Colorado, where the listed attendance was 10,000. It was November 17th, 1962. Tech beat Colorado 21-12. That was the Red Raiders' only victory that year. And it was also noteworthy for one other thing in particular, and that is the day that Dave Parks picked off a pass and returned it 98 yards for a touchdown, and that remains the longest interception return for a TD in Texas Tech history.
You're an encyclopedia, sir.
I remember that one. I did not remember when the last time Tech had fewer than 16.
Oh, no, yeah, no. I'm just saying you always bring it back to a nice little encyclopedia. But to give you some stuff, I looked some things up, too. Last year when Houston Baptist played all their games, they had one game where the attendance broke the 10,000-person mark. Can you take a guess as to who that team was where they broke it?
No idea. No guess.
It always comes back to Texas El Paso, Don. Traveled to El Paso.
Okay.
34,000. Every other game was under 10,000. Their biggest crowd that they played in front of was 7,636 when they were at Abilene Christian. That was a loss.
Yeah. And to clarify, Tech has had a few road games.
Yeah.
Were the attendance is smaller than listed attendance is smaller than 16,500, but the last time Tech had a home game with listed attendance smaller than 16,500 was November 1962 against Colorado. I don't know if this question. Let's go to Ryan King now's question.
Oh God!
I don't know. I'm not sure what number one refers to, so I'm going to go.
It's just
to number two.
It's a TV show, I'm sure.
Number two, who would win in a race, Wes Kitley or Zach Kitley?
Now,
that's a good question.
So in their primes or now?
Well, if it was in their primes, there's no doubt that would be Wes Kitley. Because Wes ran on the state championship relay team for Rule.
Yeah.
One of his teammates on that Rule state championship mile relay team was Art Briles. And Wes ran head-to-head against Lovey Smith from Big Sandy. Lovey Smith, who now
is pretty good,
you know, head coach at Illinois.
Yeah.
So if they were both in their primes, there's no doubt it would be Wes Kitley.
Yeah.
Were today,
would it be a little closer now?
You know, Zach, if I remember, I think Zach was a good long jumper at Friendship. I would say if you match him up today, I would take Zach. If you put them both at age 25 on the track, it would be Wes. Number three from Ryan King is how many wins for Texas Tech this season? I'll let you go first, Carlos.
Man, I really hate to be this guy, Don, but to be determined, because, like, I know they have 10 games ahead of them, but will they play all of them?
Well, let's say they play 10 games. If they play 10 games, how many wins?
I'm going to be that guy, and I'm just going to say they're going to go 7 wins.
7 wins? That'd be good. If they win 7, that indicates to me that all these experienced transfers really pay off in a big way.
I honestly think, one, that, and number two, I think other teams suffer a little bit because of the current situation.
I will say
there's just so much X factor to it.
I'll say, boy, it's a tough one.
Ain't it?
I'm going to say 6. I'll say 6. I'll say a 6-4 team. If they do that, that means
that's improvement. That's still improvement.
Wait there. You know what? I said, let me revise that.
Okay.
No, I'll say 6. I'll stick with 6. And 6 would be, if they win 6, that means Tech would have would be above 500 in the Big 12 for the first time since since 2009. So I'll say a 6-4 team.
There you go.
Chris Summer asked us a question which I don't understand. I might have missed something. Chris said, can he kick extra points like Matt Wells?
So I can't remember if you were on this Zoom or maybe you kind of zoned out because obviously sometimes we're on deadline. I asked Matt Wells because he talked about cross training and I just felt like asking, have you ever had a defensive lineman try to kick? And then he thought about it, and he's like, well, I know how to kick. I've kicked in high school before, because he basically described what a toe kick or flat kick, when you kind of put stuff on your Achilles and all that stuff. Like, he explained it to a T. And I guess Chris was on that you know what it was? It was on the Monday press conference. It was on the Monday teleconference. That's where it was.
You
were probably getting some
I guess I was zoned out on that.
Yeah, so that was on the teleconference. He asked me, and basically, I guess, can you toe kick? I mean, I've been able to make an extra point every once in a while, but I probably couldn't do it in college. You know, so.
Ryan, here's a good question. Ryan Hyatt Media asked.
Oh boy.
And I want you to think about this one too. If you had to follow one sports figure around for a year.
Any?
And then write a book. If you had to follow one sports figure around for a year and then write a book, who would it be?
So and while you're thinking about it. Okay.
Anybody. Okay. Anybody.
Oh, man.
If you had to follow one sports figure, I'll let you think about it for a second because and I'll take it first. If you had to follow one sports figure for a year and then write a book, who would it be? For me, it wouldn't be one, but and I'm going to preface this by saying I don't think I'm ever going to write a book because to me it seems like too daunting a task.
I agree. I've had people ask me why I don't do it.
I don't think I could be that organized and
it's just too
commit to writing 1,000 words a day for a year or whatever. But I did think this, and it's funny that he asked that because I wrote a real long, did a lot of research and wrote a real long story a couple of months ago on the 50th anniversary of the 1970 Coaches All-America game in Lubbock. And at that time, I said, if I ever had to write a book about anything, I would enjoy doing it on the Coaches All-America game, the 7 years that I was played in Lubbock, because it was played in Lubbock from 1970 to 1976. Mm-hmm. I was age 5 to 11 during that time, and I remember, you know, the sports fan, obsessed little kid that I was with sports. It was a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine, and this is a game, for those who don't know, it's played in June at Jones AT&T Stadium each summer from 1970 to 1976, put on by the American Football Coaches Association, and they tried to get the very best college seniors from the year before to play in it off the AFCA Coaches All-America teams. Mm-hmm. There were guys who played in that game who were Pro Football Hall of Famers, who went on to multiple Pro Bowls. And in 1970, the first year that I was here, you had, for example, for the Dallas Cowboys, first, second, third, and fourth round draft picks. You had Dwayne Thomas and Charlie Waters from Clemson and John Fitzgerald from Boston College and Denton Fox from Texas Tech, who were, again, Cowboys' first four draft picks that year. You had Jim Otis, who played, you know, running back for the St. Louis Cardinals all those years against the Cowboys, from Ohio State. So, you know, imagine if you had, for example, Tua Tagovailoa, a healthy Tua, come to Jones AT&T Stadium.
Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah. Again, as the previous year's seniors. But those kind of guys, you know, Grant Delpit from LSU, or imagine if you had guys like that come to Jones Stadium to play in an All-Star game in June, and before they went to training camp in July. That's what the Coaches All-America game was, and it was here for 7 years. And I had so much fun researching and writing that story and talking to players who played in it, men who are 22 then, who are 72 now. And I was kind of interested because, you know, some of those guys we talked to, like Mike McCoy from Notre Dame, went on, and Bob McKay from Texas, those guys went on to play in the NFL for a long time. And I thought that their memories of the Coaches All-America game might be kind of spotty, or that they wouldn't remember much about it. And I was pleasantly surprised because the guys I talked to, they had very vivid, sharp memories of it. Yeah. And they remembered a whole bunch of details. And it was fun. So I'm never going to write, don't think I'm ever going to write a book. But if I did, that would be a subject that I'd love to delve into, those Coaches All-America games that were played those 7 years in Lubbock. So now that I've told my story, if you had to follow one sports figure around for a year and then write a book, Carlos, who would you choose?
I think the easy one, at least for me, not from a Texas Tech perspective, and I'll go into that story a little bit later.
But I thought you were going to say Chris Beard because you.
Well, that's
back,
the thing.
You go back with him to San Angelo.
Well, that's the thing, is like everyone has been asking me, will you write a book about Texas Tech going to the national championship game? Or like on that season, which, again, there's a lot that happened that season. And yes, I was there for a majority of it, but it is a lot of work. Like, I think if I did decide it, Don, I'd have to be retired or something at that point, because at this point, there's just too much daily work for us, for, like you said, to get all your notes, get all that stuff organized.
Oh, your research,
bugging people. I'm sure he doesn't want to get bugged about this during the season at any point in time.
Okay, so not Chris Beard, then who are you choosing?
Kobe Bryant. I've just always here's the thing is, like, Michael Jordan would have been interesting, but I think the Last Dance kind of told the story that I thought I would have gotten anyway, because he doesn't really talk that much. I think Kobe's a little bit more introspective, and I think I would have gotten a little bit more out of Kobe, and I think more people don't understand Kobe as much as they think they understand Michael Jordan.
And I think your opportunity's gone now.
Yes, unfortunately.
Now here's the difference then, maybe between you and me. I find guys like that to be feel like what can be written about Kobe Bryant that hasn't already been written. Now you said that you think you could uncover more, but if I think of a book subject or something, I would be more interested in going and tackling a topic or personality that nobody's really thought of yet, that's kind of a lot of new material that's never been.
I mean, I could just go reported. For the age and just say Mike Leach. Although, right, yeah. what hasn't been
he,
about
he Mike kind
Leach?
Of beat you to the punch there.
Yes, I mean, it's like it's just one of those things. I don't know. I just feel like he said a sports figure. I think following him around, you'd probably get a little bit more about the way he dealt with family life, the way he dealt with women's athletics. I just think there's a lot more that people were unable to learn because of his untimely passing earlier this year. And I think the more people are starting to learn about him because of that, I think the more people are realizing that he was a much deeper person than he was the jerk on the court that was the guy that always made shots or something like that on the court. I think he was a lot more than that. I think that's the reason I would want to follow him around. But on that note, I got two more questions for you from Zach Duncan, who's now a assistant coach. I believe he's a tennis coach and a soccer coach at Wichita Falls High School. I apologize if I got that wrong, Zach. I didn't look at your Twitter account before this. But first question, since you're kind of in an introspective mode right now, Don, and you were talking about old games, what are your most memorable top three Tech games that you've covered? And while you think about that, I'll just try and babble on while you think. But I think the most memorable one for me, even though it was a loss for Texas Tech, was when Patrick Mahomes and Baker Mayfield basically played backyard football a couple years ago. And it was just like stat after stat after stat, touchdown after touchdown after touchdown. It's just one of those things where you can make the argument, was the offense that great? Or was the defense just not that good? I think the offenses were just that good.
I think it's a combination of both. Yeah. Offenses are great, defenses are bad, and that's it. So you had the perfect storm, and that's what happened.
Yeah.
Let's see, most memorable for me, I tell you, one of the most memorable for me, I think probably being in the top three, would be Texas Tech at Florida State in 1987 at Doak Campbell Stadium. I think it made that memorable. Not necessarily just that it was what went on down the field, and Tech led Florida State 14-13 in the second quarter of that game, wound up losing 40-16, but Burt Reynolds threw down the flaming spear at midfield before the game, and then Burt comes up to the press box, and they gave him a seat in the writer's box, so he was actually on the second row. We were on the front row, and Burt Reynolds was on the second row, so I could look over my shoulder, and Burt had with him that night two of his buddies, Ricardo Montalban, Mr. Rourke from Fantasy Island, and Dom DeLuise. And they are then. So those guys are sitting in the second row of the press box the entire first half.
And you got to listen to them probably banter because they don't know that you got to be quiet.
They're being quiet. I don't remember them saying anything. But I just remember you look over your shoulder and there's Burt Reynolds, Dom DeLuise, Ricardo Montalban sitting on the second row of the press box there at Doak Campbell Stadium.
That's definitely memorable.
Florida State. And it was memorable because Billy Joe Tolliver broke his foot that week in practice. So Scott Tolman started the season opener. Scott, who still lives here in Lubbock, and put on a heck of a show there for a half.
Yeah.
So that would be one. Holiday Bowl in 2004. We were just talking about that a moment ago.
Yeah.
Tech beat a great Cal team.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers is on that team. A freshman, Marshawn Lynch.
Yep. Before he became beast mode.
Yeah, there were like a dozen guys on that team that played in the NFL off that Cal team. It was legit with a capital L. and Tech beat them that night, 45-31. It was the coming out party for Joel Filani, who had a big game, and Sonny Cumbie finished off his career with 520 yards passing. That was a very memorable one. Love San Diego. Love the trips out there. Those are two. I tell you, here's another one. I mean, not even really looking at the media guide. 1990, Texas Tech at Arkansas. Tech was up, I want to say 49. Tech was up by 3 touchdowns or so, or more. It may have been 24
points.
Late
in the game, I guess.
Halftime. Wrote a lot back when we did first half running. Wrote a whole bunch about the first half because Tech had them blown out.
Yeah.
Had the Razorbacks down 24 points.
Yeah.
And then Arkansas makes a big second half comeback and had the ball and a chance to win it late in the fourth quarter. And Tracy Saul breaks up a pass at the goal line to save the game, 49-44 victory. Texas Tech at TCU, 1992, one of the most boring games you would want to see for 3 quarters. Tech was leading 7-3 after the third quarter. Final score, but they scored 4 touchdowns. The two teams scored 2 touchdowns apiece in the last 2.5 minutes.
Of course.
And Lloyd Hill scored with the game-winning touchdown catch and a run.
Deadliner.
Thankfully, it was not a night game. It was like a 2 o'clock game. Oh, so it ended around 5:30, 6 o'clock. But yeah, boring game, 7-3 through 3 quarters. 4 touchdowns in the last 2:38. I want to say back and forth. Tech wins. TCU wins. Yeah. No, Tech wins.
You're basically changing the headline of this game.
And Tech wins 28-24. So
yeah.
I don't know if that's the three most memorable, but that's three very memorable. Just off the top of my head.
Yeah. You have an extra one.
Yeah.
Last one from him, and probably last one for this podcast because we've been talking for a while. But what are the biggest inconveniences covering a D1 college football program in a COVID world?
That there's even less accessibility than there was previously, and there's too little accessibility as it is. I come from a time when you can stand on the sideline all day, every day, Monday through Thursday in practice. You can talk to whoever you want to talk to.
Yeah.
Stop them coming off the field. Any coach, any player that you want to visit with post-practice. The SIDs might go home early, and you could just talk to whoever you wanted when they were coming off the field. Now, unfortunately, major college football has gotten too self-important in that regard, and the accessibility is trying to think of the right description. Way less than it should be.
I can't think of a word either. And you would think two wordsmiths could think of a word, but I guess on that note, Don.
So that'll about wrap it up. Are you out of questions? I'm out of questions?
I'm out of questions.
All righty. So if you want to send us questions during the week or a couple hours before we do this, you can email or you can...
Typically, days on Wednesday. This is Wednesday right now.
Yeah, you can tweet to me at AJ_Don Williams. You can tweet to Carlos at CM Silva Jr. And tell us where to find the podcast, Carlos.
On the internet. Someone actually asked me. I can give you the exact. Putting me on the spot here, aren't you? So the website officially is omni.fm/shows/red-raiders-podcast. But the thing is you can search for us on Apple Podcast or
and we'll also link to it online.
Yeah, and Stitcher and all this other stuff. So, I mean, you can listen to it. It's just a matter of you just got to search for it, and it'll pop up. It's been a while since we put some content on there, so it's kind of nice to start this again, Don. I appreciate you taking some time out of your day. You know, sharing your knowledge.
And so, again, 7 p.m. Saturday, Texas Tech at Jones AT&T Stadium against Houston Baptist for the season opener, assuming both teams have enough COVID-negative players. And we'll be... So we thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.